You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specializing in food and science. This podcast is all about decarbonisation and net zero. And I'm joined by the marvellous Emma Pearcey, Head of Climate Change and Energy Policy at FDF, the Food and Drink Federation. How are you doing, Emma?
Very good, thank you. And thank you for having me today.
In case any of our listeners have been hiding under a rock, can you just tell us exactly what do we mean by decarbonisation and net zero?
Yes, well, that's definitions is the key to all of this, and what are we actually working to? Because I think different stakeholders can take different meanings. But really, when I talk about decarbonisation and net zero, and indeed, you know, when working with government and our stakeholders, it's about our it's about our carbon emissions and reducing those. Initially, it's been comparing to 1990 levels, but now we've got this net zero target. It's actually about reducing them to net zero by 2050. Now, when we talk about net zero, across the different ways of, you know, of how we use energy and what energy we're using, there may be instances where we might still need some fossil fuels, in which case we need to offset the carbon emissions associated with any fossil fuels we still use, and therefore that's where the net comes into it. So a net zero for the sector, and that may mean needing to invest in some, should we say, some decarbonisation projects sort of elsewhere to offset any carbon emissions, you know, that we're still producing.
So just before we dive into the detail of this, just a little view, really. How possible is it to achieve net zero emissions? Is it possible at all? And we've heard a lot about the government sort of shifting timetables and timescales for achieving various targets. What do you think?
I'd say it's definitely possible. We have an industry roadmap at the moment, which is taking into account the old target of 80% reduction by 2050. So we have this roadmap which sets us all the actions required to help us meet that. So we're now looking at that additional 20% to get to the net zero. I would say that the pathways for decarbonising electricity are well understood. What is the more challenging area, shall we say, is around decarbonising heat. And what we mean by that is in any manufacturing process, so not just food, you know, what heat you are using in the production process, whether it's through drying or through cooking, and how you generate that heat, you know, through the use of boilers, and what are the fuels you use to generate that heat, and that is what hitherto has been somewhat neglected, I think, in policy terms. Yeah. However, going forward, this year there's going to be heat and building strategy, which government is going to publish in the summer. Whilst that will not cover what they call process emissions, and that will certainly cover the building side and then for the domestic sector around heat. That does leave then, well, what do we do about process emissions? Now, at FDF, actually, I think it's just before Christmas, we kicked off a project to look at how to decarbonise heat in food and drink manufacturing. And we're currently working with our members to update some of our emissions projections and some other research. And we will look to publish the report on the 7th of May. So give me a watch this space, and we'll be able to say a lot more, I think, in a couple of months' time.
Yeah. Now, the food industry is a huge manufacturing industry for the UK. It's a huge part of it.
Indeed. I think it's the largest manufacturing sector, greater than aviation and cars combined, I think. And in terms of GDA.
So in terms of, I mean, there must be a whole range of different
aspects of the industry that you're looking at. What's the low-hanging fruit? What's the first stage? If I've got a factory or I'm creating a product, what's the bit that you would advise me to look at first?
Energy efficiency. Absolutely.
What's that likely to be?
I think the same question and the same answer can be applied to absolutely everyone in all industries and also even ourselves at home. The cheapest way of saving our energy bills is to reduce the amount of energy we use. And of course, by reducing the amount of energy we use, that reduces the carbon emissions. What I would say is that, you know, I'm not an engineer, so it's difficult for me to comment on the specific technologies. But, you know, there are a number of what are called best available techniques and various kind of, bodies that are able to advise companies on what measures they can take. For example, also through these energy saving audits, which have to be done every 3-4 years. But recently, I think back in December, firms had to publish their energy saving action plan. Yeah. So the firms will be aware of what they can do already. And I think the key challenge is in terms of how to fund those investments and looking at payback periods. So this is very much an evolving area. People, I think, know what to do, but we're not quite there yet in terms of having that tipping point on achieving the required payback.
And presumably, you know, for a lot of businesses, this is as much as being, you know, eco-conscious. This is about profit maximization and about return on investment. And do you see from the work that companies do that they pretty much always profit from looking at reducing their emissions?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily actually frame it quite as you've done, because I think it's also about making yourself fit for the future. For all of us, and companies, if you do not, take heed of the direction of travel that we're going in, you know, energy costs are going up and up. Therefore, that is the driver also to reduce costs. So it's not actually necessarily about profit maximization. It's about maintaining profitability full stop, I think. And making yourself, you know, able to compete and continue to compete going forward, because it's those who are able to respond to these challenges ahead which will be the ones that that survive and thrive, I think.
And then once you've covered the simpler aspects of what you can do, presumably sort of transport and heat emissions and things like that, what are the tricky...
Transport is quite difficult. very difficult. I mean, just on that point there, I met with someone recently at the Centre for Sustainable Trade, based at Heriot Watt University in Edinburgh. And he was explaining to me the challenges around freight and how we decarbonise that. And, you know, whilst, you know, we see a move to electric vehicles for smaller, for domestic cars and smaller vehicles, it's a different matter when it comes to freight. Because whether you move to electrification or you go down, say, hydrogen-fuelled freight vehicles, neither option is coming out as a front runner at the moment. Both have a lot of pros and cons. A lot more research is being done in this area. So, going to your earlier conversation, your earlier question actually about, you know, how can we achieve net zero? I think it's fair to say that right now we know X percentage of the answer, but there's a lot still we don't know. So. I think Sainsbury's, they recently launched their sustainability strategy and I said net zero by 2040. And I think they said that they know something like 40% of the answer now, but they don't know 60%. So just like with that area of transport we were just referring to, there is going to be a lot of work, so much work going forward, to work out, you know, the answer to the questions that we still have.
Yeah. Now, what's your role in this? Are you, so you're head of climate change and energy policy at the FDF. Are you creating guidelines for your members, or are you actively researching and sort of bringing together the different places in the area? How are you playing this?
Yes. Well, the main piece of work I'm doing at the moment is around how to decarbonize heat in the manufacturing process. And with that, we are looking at basically how to meet that difference between the 80% reduction target and net zero target, looking at the gap between the two. What are the technologies that can be used to fill that gap, in what proportions? And then, you know, looking at, well, what are the barriers to those technological developments, and what, therefore, what enablers are needed to overcome those barriers. In effect, we will come up with a list of sort of policy proposals, and it is those that we will then work with government to, you know, hopefully bring to fruition. So in terms of bringing our members along on this journey, you know, that's what we're working on at the moment over this month, is to review some of the initial conclusions of the project, you know, and seeing, you know, whether there are additional contributions that they can make to the viewpoints that we're taking. And then, you know, in forthcoming government consultations, then, you know, it's about building the case for, in terms of my role, for the role of further sort of policy support, policy and regulatory support. Now, that does not just mean, you know, that we're looking at grant support. It's going to be much, there'll be elements of that, as we see with this Industrial Energy Transformation Fund, it's a program being run by BEIS, but there'll be other sort of regulatory tools. For example, at the budget last week, we had announced that there would be a two-year extension to the climate change agreement. Now, that was very welcome news, because currently they're due to finish in March 23, so we'll have a two-year extension. Now, with that, in return for companies meeting certain targets in carbon reduction and energy efficiency, they then get a discount on their climate change levy. So, you know, there's tax incentives as well. But I think, again, with this role of mine, it's then, okay, so we have this two-year extension to the scheme, but what about beyond that? So what we, in this forthcoming consultation that we've been told will come very shortly, this will also look at the policy options for these climate change agreements on a long-term basis. And these are likely to look very different in design and form, because the targets going forward will be much higher. So that will be a key area of work for me as well. And this work that, you know, that I'm undertaking at the moment with decarbonising heat, this is all about building the evidence base, you know, to be able to feed into these other policy sort of areas that are coming up.
Now, in case any of our listeners are a little bit confused about what we're talking about, this is the Department for Business, Engineering and Industrial Strategy, and there's a white paper on energy that's out shortly. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, so there's a couple of things there. So specifically on climate change agreements, this was an announcement of the budget last week, about a two-year extension. There will specifically be a consultation on this shortly. And then separately, indeed we have the Energy White Paper, which is going to be a much wider and larger consultation document. I mean, you are right. It is possible, actually, the CCA aspect may be contained within it. However, I think that may be unlikely simply because Bayes mentioned that they'd also specifically consulting on the initial two-year extension. So I think the energy white paper is going to be at a much higher level sort of strategic basis. Yes. So I think they might be separate, but we'll see.
We're using words like strategy and sort of overall regulation and support and white papers. Can we just get a bit more specific for a minute? Just so that, because in case that our listeners are thinking, well, what are you really talking about? Can you give me some examples of the sorts of things that you're working on? So we talked about heat, for instance, earlier on. And the sort of projects that work at the moment. So the things that you're that are actively being done that are good practice.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think a key topic in general, because obviously coming from food and drink federation, is also about waste and what do manufacturers do with their waste streams, you know, from the products they're making. So what one example? This is possible to a lot of them is that they have two options for dealing with waste. It's quite often done is to turn it into animal feed, but then another option is actually to use it for what they call anaerobic digestion, to basically make energy from, and so it also is then it's also classed as renewable as well. But this whole area actually of waste streams and what is the best way to deal with them. That's quite a challenging subject because actually there are competing uses for this waste stream. So if it's not produced for animal feed, then it goes to energy. But then the farmers won't get perhaps as much animal feed from their current sources. So things need to level out, but there are some things that will change over time, and how they will change, I suppose, will be in some ways dependent on market forces. We've talked in the energy side of things, we've talked a lot about the cost of carbon. And I think what is fair to say is that as the cost of carbon goes up, and it will, then that will push more of the waste into energy production on sites, because that will reduce the amount of fossil fuels that sites would need to use in what they need in their manufacturing processes. So that's quite an interesting topic. And I think just general ways of in terms of machinery and efficiency in those processes, investments to improve the efficiency. Now, I'm not an engineer, so I'm not going to sort of name specific technologies, but that is what you'd call low hanging fruit anyway in terms of energy efficiency. We in a more of a medium and perhaps longer term perspective, we're talking, or should we say industry is talking about hydrogen ready boilers. Yeah. So there will be hydrogen in future, and when it comes to deploying new boilers, then actually there is some are now moving to adopting these particular boilers, which will be possible to take on hydrogen at a future date. So that's a very positive development. But I think it's more than just energy, because actually sustainability as a whole and for the food sector, that has a lot of strands to that debate. So taking this holistic overview is going to be very important. As I mentioned, with waste streams and how best to utilise those. Yeah. There needs to be some sort of coordination between government departments to make sure that that they get the best outcomes for everyone.
Well, this one I'm really interested in, because the food industry, we talked about it, it's the biggest manufacturing industry in the UK. I get the sense that a lot of the food industry feels that it's not really given the the weight and importance that it deserves by government. So does the Department for Business, Engineering and Industrial Strategy care enough? I mean, presumably, you're at the FDF, we're talking about policy here. Are they interested? You know, have you been speaking to them about the food industry's views to help out the white paper? Do they care enough?
Well, we are one of the seven or eight industrial sectors that did have roadmaps put in place so a few years ago now. I think it's back in 2015 was the roadmap, and then a couple of years later in 2017 the action plans. So that was very positive that we had that in place. However, I mean, I only joined FDF in October, so I think that's been about 6 months now. But I did learn that with those roadmaps, for example, that there was, should we say, I don't want to say disagreement, but should we say, let's put it this way, there wasn't a volunteer from who would lead on the roadmap for the food sector, because effectively the food sector straddles both departments. Because, you know, clearly, obviously, as indeed this purpose conversation, the manufacturing sites need energy to operate, but predominantly, really, you know, it's food has been under DEFRA. So this is something that in terms of work between the two departments needs to increase, to make sure it's lined up. But I'd say certainly with my joining in October, all my career background has been in energy. That has been one of the reasons, I think, for me joining is to raise the profile of these energy-related issues for the food sector. So I would personally say I'm getting some very good engagements with BEIS.
You mentioned roadmaps. Do roadmaps matter? Do they change anything?
I would say yes. But I would say it's like a tool in the box. This year, we as FDF are also updating our Ambition 2025, which is basically a series of targets we have, for example, in water, consumption, waste, energy, and some others too. And as per the 2025 target, we need to review them and need to review them in light of the net zero target. So this is a topic that we are talking with members at the moment about, and these roadmaps, and indeed, you know, the other publications that are coming out and discussion around COP26 later in this year. This is all very helpful in building the case for action. You know, and helping companies, you know, build that case with, you know, when they have the internal decision making processes on investments, etc. So, you know, like with any policy work, there is never just one thing that is like a magic bullet. It's a combination, sort of factors that help. You know, people to act, and that's the way I've put in the roadmap, and yeah, so it's helpful, but not the only answer.
Now, we're recording this on Monday, the 16th of March, 2020. Coronavirus is in full swing. The UK is not yet in lockdown, but there's been lots of, I mean, there's been a fundamental change to life in the UK. Do you think that a pandemic and issues like hygiene issues will set back the drive towards decarbonisation? So I guess I'm not talking so much about what goes on in a food factory, but certainly in things like retail and things like transport and issues like that and the way that are sold. Is that going to set back the drive towards decarbonisation, or is that just another bump in the road amongst many?
I would certainly put the latter in terms of maybe a little bump in the road, but actually I wouldn't even be as strong as that, because although just as an example, for the next couple of months, you know, we're not having any large external events, and actually really pretty much all of my external events are not cancelled, but we're changing them to like on the phone, as indeed we are today, or sort of webinars, or just alternative ways of continuing the work that we're doing, you know, making progress, because we don't, no one wants, none of us wants, and we've been speaking with members, we've been speaking with the government, that everyone wants to continue on this journey rather than have a pause. Because one of the things I think we'll find is that if we don't do that, then it's also going to be a bit of a crunch, you know, towards the second half of this year when, you know, things are hopefully all getting back to normal. So we're very much, I mean, and with the project I mentioned that I'm working on the decarbonisation of heat, we're having a workshop with members at the end of the month, and whilst that was to be in person, well, we're now doing it online in a slightly different format, but we're nevertheless going ahead with it. And the same with the launch of our report, which at the beginning of May, which will now, okay, not be an event in person, but will be a webinar. So it's something that we really want to keep going, and I know government is very much, you know, all our stakeholder members are wanting to do the same.
Yeah. Now, I would imagine...
It's going to be a little bit difficult, but we'll continue the best we can.
Yeah. Now, I would imagine your work sort of on policy is frankly really difficult and a bit a nightmare. What would make your life easier? If you could call out to the industry and say, come on, engage with us on these particular areas, on this particular level, what would you say? Who is it that you need to make your life easier?
Well, we've touched upon already the need for the coordination between government departments. You know, we've talked here about DEFRA and BEIS. We also obviously need here to add Treasury as well. And I think, so Treasury, for example, they are doing a report which will come out in the autumn on the costs of meeting net zero. Well, to be honest, that would have been quite helpful to have that report a bit earlier, like earlier in the year now. And then to have these other policy consultations come later in the year, because you know, when we talk about being able to meet net zero and the policy measures required, well, you know, we need to look at how much it's going to cost and you know, and these kind of discussions. So I think, you know, there's timing issues, but you know, nevertheless, I suppose a few months is not that bad in the scheme of things. But the general comment around, you know, we all government departments transport, you know, include as well. We need to make sure that we're all kind of working to those common goals, and that there are no, should say, unintended consequences of policy work in one area having an effect in another. So that's something I think something that we need to do as a, should say, as a industry, as a society, we need to work more together on.
Is the industry itself, the food industry itself, is it open and sharing on this issue, or are people making advances in things and thinking, oh, we'd better keep this to ourselves because that gives us a competitive advantage?
Yes, I think that's an interesting question. There'll be elements of both. I think there are certain, there'll be certain common technologies which, you know, firms can go to, you know, to tender for in terms of, I don't know, around energy efficiency, which is sort of standard, which I don't think there'd be that problem with. But then also, you know, you'll have, which is a good thing, there'll be collaborations between universities and, you know, research institutions and certain companies. Now there may be, copyright's not the right word, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There may be some challenges around that, but even with that, actually, when you might have heard these industrial clusters, I think there's about seven or eight industrial clusters around the UK where the government wants to see the first low carbon by 2030 and the first zero carbon by 2040. Now, with the learnings that will come out of those, there'll be a lot of funding for those kind of areas and projects. And one of the goals is to basically share that learning between those industrial clusters, but also much wider across the rest of the country and across the different industries. So they're certainly tackling that subject of sharing that knowledge. But indeed, yes, it is a question of, in a sense, who pays for it, how is it funded, and sharing the benefits.
And then, okay, so just to finish off, I think it'd be really good to sort of give your work a real plug. What would you say about your ambitions for what you can achieve and how we might best do it? Let's finish on a really optimistic note of saying, right, this is what the future could look like.
That's a big question. I think that later this year we will be publishing our revised ambition 2025 in light, ahead of COP26, and I think that will include a revised ambition, or sort of certainly some revised wording around our carbon targets. And I think there's a strong desire across stakeholders, to obviously to work to the 2050 target, but also let's see what we can we do it soon, and we're going to have that conversation. So I think the will is there, and we've got a pathway for discussing that with our members, we are, as FDF, we're plugging into a lot of the industry activities on that are dealing with a lot of these questions. So I think together, we can achieve this, and together we'll work out the answers to those questions that are currently unanswered.
Okay, well, what you're working on is vitally important, so I think we all hope for the best, and not just that, but as soon as possible, because I'm sure it will come, but it's a question of all the best of luck for your work. Emma Pearcey, Head of Climate Change and Energy at the FDF, thank you so much for your time.
You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.